Hello, dear internet strangers. Today is June 30th, and my name is Kevin E. Carlson.
And I'm Steve Kubitz.
And we are talking in obscurity. And today we're talking about The Panic Virus by Seth Mnookin. It's a book about vaccines, and, you know, we here at Talking in Obscurity haven't been able to read the room since 2020, so we thought we'd talk about viruses.
It seems fun to me, honestly. I don't. Is there something I'm not aware of? I don't really pay attention to the news very much. So
yeah, I know we've been off for a little while now, and Steve is unaware of things because I've had him locked in my basement this whole time. I just let him up today so we could do the show.
I actually only exist in this realm. I actually am not a real human being.
Yeah, it's just a voice that I'm talking to myself.
It's a very impressive impression you can do.
It's especially impressive when I'm talking at the same time to myself.
You can vary voice, like a good ventriloquist dummy.
I don't know where we're going with this, but let's dive into the book. Let's get into the book. So the first thing I liked about this book is, well, to be serious, it's still relevant today. You know, it was about how people were afraid of giving vaccines to their children because there could be... They were worried about autism, their kids developing autism. But there's still a whole bunch of people who are very concerned about the COVID vaccine today.
Yeah, I think that, like, as we're learning more and more as the vaccines are becoming more and more sort of readily available and widespread availability of the COVID vaccine, there's certain people that are just immediately mistrusting or don't trust anything that's... It's interesting. The one thing that I find fascinating is, you know, people that go, "I don't trust that. I'm not going to put that in my body," but then they smoke, or they drink Diet Coke. I mean, I love Diet Coke. I couldn't tell you what's in Diet Coke.
You're a monster.
Yeah. So
I'm like, why are you drinking?
And this idea that people are like so paranoid of like what's in a vaccine or like what's, and I get it. There's a lot of scary science words, but you know, I've always deferred. If you seem smarter than me, I'm going to trust your opinion on things.
Well, especially if, like, they're a doctor. And, like, I think a lot of our problem is we're listening to a lot of people who are not doctors, or they're the wrong kind of doctor. Like, the chiropractor can call himself a doctor, but, like, he doesn't do vaccines.
Yeah, I love listening to people that I can go get medical advice from a guy whose practice is right next to, like, a Pizza Hut. And right between, and right next to the other side of it is a really crappy liquor store.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be in a mall when malls were still a thing. But the thing that I like the most about this book is that usually whenever you're listening to an anti-vax argument, it takes a very emotional tone. And it's like, it's always an anecdotal story where somebody's sister's son or cousin's daughter or whatever, they were just fine and they were a toddler and then they started getting their vaccines and then the symptoms started happening where it turns out, unfortunately, that child had autism. And to flip that on its head, the author, Seth Mnookin, he tells a story early on in this book that I really like, where he uses the same emotional tactic and anecdotal story on the other side, where it's this child who he didn't get certain vaccinations because his parents didn't want to put him through that, and he unfortunately had a HIB infection, and he almost died, and everything was going wrong, where they couldn't take him to the hospital via helicopter because of inclement weather, and they were trying to get the Children's Hospital in Pittsburgh, so Pittsburgh weather can be rainy at pretty much all the time. I'm surprised it's not raining right now. But, like, the... I really liked how that story, like, makes you feel what these people felt. And these aren't stupid people. They were just trying to do the best for their child, and he almost died. And luckily, he didn't die. But I think it's a very relevant story where, like, these people were not doctors, and they were listening to people who are not doctors.
Yeah, and I think that's, like, you see that come up a lot in this book, sort of who you should listen to. And Seth Manoogian he's very critical of sort of America's problem with celebrities listening to, like, Jenny McCarthy, I think he specifically mentions.
Yeah, he does.
You know, so, and I don't know if she's even, in the year of our Lord 2021, I don't even think she's even that relevant anymore. But, you know, she was such a, I remember her being such a huge voice in the anti-vax movement. And what's also funny is, you know, we listen to these celebrities, and and you're seeing it today, not Jenny McCarthy, but in influencers on, like, Instagram or other social media sites. I remember early on during in the pandemic, you know, there was a lot of, you know, people that were just like, their whole thing was they looked pretty and they posted nice photos on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Going, I don't think, as long as you have a good immune system and, you know, drink orange juice and buy this thing that I'm promoting, you'll definitely not have any problems from COVID.
Oh, yeah, it's just as bad. It's only as bad as the flu. The flu, according to the CDC, usually on a bad year will kill about 30,000 Americans. And that's something that we have vaccines for every year. And COVID killed 500,000. Like, I've heard people say, well, you can't trust everything the CDC says. I'm like, well, who are we going to trust instead? Like, because I've listened to my uncle a few times, and it's never worked out.
Yeah, I think that's, like, the crux, I think, with this book, to make sure, we, you know, to sort of keep it here in this sort of universe, is that you have a lot of people, and America has this problem, where we are always convinced that the experts are lying, the other people are telling the truth, and the other people are often, like, weird YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Like,
we're like the rogue scholar who's going to tell us that, according to their research, that this is what the mainstream people are telling you isn't right. And I mean, like, that's an American tradition of individuality. But, like, when it comes to infectious disease, we can't all be our individual little islands.
And it's, I think it's also to sort of, again, it brings up, this book does bring it up, how scientists and science, the method of science, is about being wrong and going from it and learning from it. But there's this weird sort of idea that if you're not absolute 100% of the time, then we should just throw everything away. And you see that a lot in this sort of anti-science world where, like, in the COVID-19 is the pandemic that we're most recently still living through, and most recent is that, like, early on, there was, should we wear masks? What should we do? Should we wash our hands 1,000 times a day? But we learned, as we learned the disease, studied the disease, you're not likely to get it from surfaces as much as you are from breathing air, so masks are better. And they'd, we got that wrong initially because we thought it was, but then the people that already were kind of COVID deniers were like, no, see, look, they're wrong, so they're always wrong.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing about the scientific process is that you make your best hypothesis on the information you have today, but you can't be so beholden to it that you can't throw it out when new information, better information comes in. And that's exactly what happened there, is that, I mean, washing your hands a whole bunch sounded like a good idea, and it probably was a good idea. A lot of us didn't get the flu this year, but it didn't really help us against COVID so much. It just helped us to have cleaner hands, really.
I think it was disgusting that there were people that didn't know you should wash your hands.
I've never washed my hands since 1999. Until, what, like this year?
Well, yeah, obviously, yeah. Because you started washing hands because you didn't want to catch that Y2K bug?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I stopped. After I was like, Y2K is not a thing. I mean, speaking of horrible people that empower this, that where the science community can fail us. I mean, all of this really started, and Manoogian really brings up in this book, with a doctor called Andrew Wakefield, who he was the original guy that, like, he published in the Lancet.
Yeah, I think the Lancet Journal of Medicine.
Yeah, it was the Lancet Medical Journal that there was a possible link between childhood development and developing autism after
was it the MMR vaccine?
Yes, it was the early vaccines that you get when you're a child. And that was all flawed. He was one of the people that really empowered all of these other people who really didn't understand what he was talking about. And the Lancet actually had to retract that eventually and apologize for like publishing a very flawed study.
Yeah, and I think that like with that, it is sort of the, you know, he was, I don't know what the medical, in the lawyer world, he's disbarred. He's no longer a doctor. He's not allowed to practice medicine.
He was stricken from the medical register.
Yeah, but it's interesting how, again, you still see his thing referenced all the time. Like, you'll see some, usually an uncle or a family member of some kind, or a friend, or like a mutual friend somewhere, like you went to high school with, still citing that, oh no, there's links between like vaccines and autism. I once, not that long ago, was talking to a friend's mom, and she wanted me to read this book about how, and it was, I think, that Andrew Wakefield's book.
Mm-hmm.
And, she was like, oh, if you look, there's a lot of links between, I'm like, I'm not ever going to read that book. It's hogwash, but thanks for, I think that's the thing. But I think it's his stuff, even though it's been debunked 1,000 times over,
people still drag it up.
And like, what's that expression that, a lie will travel across the world before
this is always attributed to Mark Twain.
Yeah, before the truth can put his boots on.
Yeah, that's apocrypha at most if it's Mark Twain. It's a great quote.
It's a great quote,
like,
but
a lie will be around the world twice over before the truth has the time to lace up its boots.
Yeah, and like that's something you see with this. Like, that was a one study in 1998. It was published in 1998. So that's a long time ago. It was debunked immediately. This wasn't like it was listed and then like in 2008, they're like, oh, a decade later, sorry, we were wrong. It was like a month later, like, oh yeah, this is wrong.
Yeah, it's scary that it gets in there, got in there in the first place. Because like, I know for a while after reading this book, every time I read in the newspaper or something, somebody would reference The Lancet, and like, they once published that vaccines cause autism. The Autism Medical Journal. And I'm sure that it's not what they want to be known for, but that's kind of what I remember about them.
I mean, great people, great things can make mistakes. The New Republic published Stephen Glass.
Yeah, that is true.
And
people can make mistakes. I've made many mistakes myself. But I want to transition into like things that I had, what I didn't love about this book at this point. And so as time has gone on, I've become a more liberal person, much more inclined to vote blue than red nowadays. But you can really tell that's true about this author. And he spends an inordinate amount of time, in my opinion, where he will just randomly attack the Republican Party for being the party of anti-science and crackpot theories, and if you've watched the news, it's kind of hard to disagree with him. I'm not saying that that isn't worth its own book, like how the GOP has become the party of anti-science, but that should be its own book. It's very distracting in this book because I think we were talking about this at one point. Like, there are plenty of people on the left that also are anti-vax. I can't tell you how many times I've talked to like somebody who is a crystal healer, and if that's your belief, sure, but maybe get your vaccine and also have the crystals heal you.
Yeah, I think that's sort of my also main gripe with this book, is that I do feel that politically, there are certain people that the moment they hear any criticism of their side, they're gonna tune everything else you say out.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, I think here is an example of, there's definitely valid reasons to criticize the Republican Party in terms of how they sort of, they love towing the line of, science denial for a benefit. Because, not to get too political, but those people, the people that are elected officials, they got that vaccine, the COVID-19 vaccine, as soon as they could.
Yeah.
But it won't stop them from sort of still playing to that base, because they know some of that base is very anti-science and very, mistrusting. But at the same time, there's plenty of people, and you mentioned a second ago, that we all know somebody that is a hippie, very liberal, very progressive, love everybody, I don't trust the toxins. I don't, you know, I don't, you know, I, everything's all natural. I do this, I do this, I do, you know, all these things, you know, so there's no one party that owns sort of anti-science. What's that expression? The horseshoe theory of politics, where like eventually both sides are, even though you can be completely diametrically opposed to each other, eventually
you start sounding the same.
You'll start sounding the same. I think anti-science and sort of anti-intellectualism, it's a bipartisan thing.
Yeah, well, one of the few things that people can agree on. And I think that this is, like, too important a topic to make it a Republican problem or a Democratic problem. It's everybody's problem. There are people on all sides that they're afraid of vaccines. And this book is specifically focusing on that it could cause their children to have autism. But, like, we see it today with the COVID vaccines. And I honestly had, I got mine, and I'll be completely honest with everyone, I had a real bad reaction to it. Like, and I was sick as a dog for like 2 days. Weird sick too, because no coughing or anything like that. Just body aches, like the worst flu I'd ever had. But my reaction was very rare. And on the third day, I was perfectly fine again. And like, yeah, that was a miserable experience. But you know what's a little bit more miserable than the flu for like 2 days? Death.
Well, yeah, or being on a ventilator.
Yeah. Because you can't look at the cremation fields in India. Like, they have those those flyovers where you see the fields of people being burned up and not see the huge human scale of this. And I'm getting a little far off the book at this point, but the topics are intertwined with, like, what the doctors are really trying to do is they're trying to get the maximum benefit for the most amount of people. And what to can bring it back to this, I think that the disservice in this book of really attacking the Republican Party at times, it introduces the concept of bias. And whenever there's bias, you said it earlier, people will just shut down. And this is too important a topic for that.
Yeah, kind of thing. I think that, like, for me, you know, everyone has bias. You know, there's no such person, there's no person on planet Earth that is immune from having bias and sort of that playing a part in whatever they're doing. I do think, though, you have to figure out where your bias is going to present itself and how it's going to present. And for a book like this, which I feel is very important, this book came out in 2011, I believe, 2010, 2011.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's a decade ago, but it's still very painfully relevant today. But, you know, when you sort of have this weird moment of just like, yeah, the GOP sucks and everyone, which, you know, however you want to, you know, however you vote or choose to vote or whatever, that's going to then cloud everything else you're saying, unfortunately. And if you are critical of certain aspects of legislation or certain aspects of how people choose to get elected, I think that's a little different than just outright attacking or outright just, you can immediately tell right away what a person's viewpoint is.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I said that. There's nothing wrong with having a viewpoint. And I think one thing I know we're sort of in the dislike section of this book, but the one thing I do value in this book is someone that works in media. His attacks on the media in this book, I think, are very valid.
Mm-hmm.
And it links back to bias, because I think media very often is what's called a bias to fairness, where when you hear something, if I were a person going on TV saying that I think the sky is orange, they wouldn't put me on TV and go, "Sky, the sky is orange, is it? ? And here's the debate between what color the sky is." Because I'd be a lunatic.
Yeah, because it's ridiculous. Yeah. The concept is ridiculous.
But they do that so often with a lot of anti-science stuff. Like, they've had people that do dispute that, like, they think, oh, vaccines cause these problems, and they don't. The fact is, by some situations, some have one side. Some have 1,000 sides. Not everything has 2 sides. you know, and this is a situation I truly believe that where the media, and this book gets into it, and I agree with it, that the media fails because it tries to present this as this multifaceted sort of debate. It's a debate in the same way that, I guess, flat earth is a debate.
Yeah. I mean, like, and but we wouldn't let the, those people wouldn't get on CNN, you would hope. I mean, but like, to put it to another, or something else that's always debated is both sides, is whenever we get into the evolutionary theory or not, whether or not we should teach creationism in schools to get both sides. Like, you can experiment out how animals adapt and evolve over time. You can't really, like, experiment out the creationist theory. It's one of those faith-based stuff. And if that's your thing, fine. That's something that you should learn in the church. You shouldn't learn in school.
Yeah, and I think that's where, like, so the thing this book really hammers home, and I think it does it really well, is that the media has failed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, spectacularly so, the American people. And it isn't just a Fox News thing. It isn't just CNN. It's all of them. You know, I know if you're a person that, however you lean politically, you're going to like what, you're going to like the side that says what, you know, that's on your side, and you're going to hate the other one. But if you're a person that really, like, values journalism, you hate the media.
Yeah.
And I say this as someone that works in the media.
Mm.
And I think that we consistently, and we fail consistently, and we fail often. And that's why we're in the mess that we're in.
Well, I mean, I think we should transition to our more of a parting thoughts section here, where I originally reviewed this book on Writing in Obscurity on March 20th, 2020, and I reread my article then, and you can read it now on my blog, and the tone that I regret the most is that the idea that I fed into the idea that autism is this apocalyptic event and that it's catastrophe. And I've evolved over the course of this year from talking to people who are autistic, because it's a spectrum. And there are people who have fulfilling lives. And I felt like I did them a disservice by and I was trying to take a sympathetic tone to, like, parents who are afraid. And that's why they go down this road of anti-vaxxers, because they're afraid that their children are going to be autistic. But the thing is that being an autistic person isn't the end of the world. I mean, there are some cases that are more profound, and they have certain disabilities that need to be addressed, but, like, there are plenty of autistic people who are very high functioning, and they give so much to us. And I feel like that even contributing inadvertently to this narrative that to be autistic is bad is an awful thing, and I regret feeding into that. And that's, like, it goes back to your point, like, sometimes good things can do bad stuff. And, like, I felt like that was a disservice that I did.
Yeah, and I think that that's fair. I think that's actually, like I said, I think that's, we've all, I think for a long time I had that sort of same mindset of, like, well, who cares, you know? You have this, it's sort of like this flippant idea where you're well-intentioned by saying, like, oh, who cares if your kid's autistic? It's better than, then you realize that, like, no, like, it's not a binary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it isn't, like, I've heard a lot of people say, well, even if vaccines did cause autism, you know, is the risk still... The thing is, there's no risk to being autistic. It's not a risky thing. It's not like you can catch it and it's like this, like, disease. Like, it's a spectrum, and it's like anything. It's like any sort of existence that there's inherent value in humanity, in your humanity. And whether you're autistic or... what's the one that's... like, it's not really used anymore, but, like, Asperger's syndrome or whatever.
Yeah.
Which we now realize is now just... it's on the autism spectrum. It's not like its own thing.
Yeah, and I've always tried to be the kind of person that sees the value in all human life. And, like, it's especially difficult whenever you get into an argument with somebody you really don't like. But, like, everybody deserves to be here, and everybody deserves to have their voice heard. And there are plenty of people in the autistic community who are, they're just as creative and they're just as valuable as me or you or anybody else, and they deserve to have a voice. And I was disappointed in how I wrote that. I'm not going to take it down because I feel like it's, that would be hiding, like I am ashamed of what I wrote, and like there's a certain amount of shame to the like the tone. I regret that, but like I want to show that like I had those. I've changed over time, and like that's a thing that I thought was worth talking about today.
As it turns out, your growth as a human is very similar to the scientific method. You're not, you know, you're not always defined by what you were a year ago, 2 years ago, 5, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever. You know, and I think that like to sort of relate it to this book, and what I really, really like about this book immensely is that it does a really good job of this sort of complex sort of world. Science is confusing. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest here. Like for 95% of people, the only science experience they have is in high school and maybe in college, like maybe a biology class in college. But in this book, I think, does a really good job. It's probably because he's not a scientist. Mm-hmm. He's not, that he's coming at this from a much more rudimentary level. Maybe not so much now, 10 years later. He's definitely much more of an expert voice. Mm. But when he wrote the book, he was not really an expert in terms of like the actual science of what he was talking about.
Yeah.
This book isn't really about the expert science, which I think is, I think it's funny. A book called The Panic Virus, you would think would be much more science heavy than this book actually is. What I like about this book, and what I really love about this book, is that you can read it and you don't have to know anything about science to really get what it's talking about. And I think that's a really brilliant sort of way to address this sort of, this issue. Because it isn't just science. It's actually sort of taking people that don't understand science so they automatically fear it. And this book is saying, hey, you can not understand science but still respect it and see that its value is just trying to do good. It's not trying to like be this nefarious sort of evil thing.
Yeah, my final point to build off of that is that I think that we have a problem with like people who are the amateur researcher, where we're not trusting the experts. I think that a lot about what this book is that you have to accept that there are people who have more specialized knowledge than you, and they know more than you, and you need to trust the specialists on something. Like listening to Jenny McCarthy, even when she was on Oprah, was not a good idea for medical advice for your children. And like, and don't necessarily trust just me. I'm encouraging you to see what the doctors say about getting vaccines. Like, I'm just a guy who with talking to his friend on a podcast here, but you should really listen to the doctors. Because a lot of people think that what research is, well, I read an article and it agreed with what I thought, so that was a great article and I've done my research. But the actual research involves adding to the scientific understanding. There is a whole step of, you make your hypothesis, you go out and you see who is what the literature is like. You then evaluate the methodology of the said literature. Then you look at what their logic is. Then you see how many times they were peer-reviewed. Then you refine your hypothesis. Then you do experiments based on your hypothesis. And then you see if your experimental results can be replicated by other people. Is the random person in your office who said, I researched this online last night, really doing that? I don't think so. If you're not doing that whole process of going through from start to finish, and this is why research takes years to like learn new stuff, is because it's a slow process of evaluating not just your source of material, but their sources, and seeing if these results work out.
I think it's the perfect way to sort of define this is if ever seen the Parks and Rec, there's an episode where Ron Swanson goes to the Home Depot equivalent of that universe. Mm-hmm. And an employee walks up and he goes, "Hey, sir, I know more than you."
I haven't seen that
one. And sometimes that's just the case. Someone, and in this case, a lot of scientists, know a lot more than you do. And that's okay. It doesn't mean you're stupid. It doesn't mean that you are, you know, less than. You know, I would wager that I know more about baseball than most scientists. Hmm. And if I was debating the merits of the universal DH with a microbiologist, I'd really like my chances in that debate. But if I was talking about what they should do in a global pandemic, less so.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean I'm stupid. It doesn't mean that it doesn't mean anything. It just means that in this situation, that instance, that person, that's their livelihood. That's what they know. That's what they're trained in. All this. And I think that we as a country have this weird problem where we think that like any authority on something needs to then be questioned. And you absolutely should you should question authority. But if you question it, you better bring the receipts.
Yeah.
It isn't just, I don't really like the way this feels.
That's really my last thought on thing. If you're like me, and like a lot of us are used to dealing with making decisions based on our intuitions on things. Our intuition isn't necessarily made for making complex medical decisions about your health. And doing several Google searches over the course of weeks or even months is not really going to prepare you to make complex medical decisions without an expert's advice who actually works in the field. And like, they're saying you should get vaccinated. I defer to that.
I think that's kind of really what this book, if you break it down to its like elements, that's kind of what it's saying. That sometimes in instances like this, trust the damn scientists. They didn't go to school for a decade plus and do all their field research and all their things just to annoy you so you have to wear a mask to Giant Eagle or whatever your grocery store is.
Yeah, like you've really
like
shown our location.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. Like, there was a meme early on in the pandemic, and this is where I got that from. It's like, yes, Anthony Fauci has done 40 plus years of public service and done all the schooling he went through, all the work he's done on all these things, just to annoy your Uncle Craig because he has to wear a mask when he goes to Home Depot. Like,
well, I think that really wraps up everything I want to say about this book. I mean, I liked it a lot.
I really love this book, and I remember I actually got into it before the pandemic even hit. Before, I remember we talked about this book.
Yeah, back in 2019.
Yeah, and then, of course, it became so apropos really quickly, and it's still, here we are, in June, and it's still apropos.
Yeah.
It's still really, like, and that's kind of scary how this book will probably be as relevant. It was relevant in 2011, it's relevant in 2020. I wager a bet it'll be really relevant in 2031, too.
Yep. Well, thank you for joining us on this journey into the panic virus by Seth Mnookin. Tune in next month, hopefully. Another global pandemic doesn't happen and we have to take a hiatus again.